Hey, everybody. Welcome again to F This Movie, the official podcast of FThisMovie.net. Movie love for movie lovers. My name is Patrick Bromley, and I'm super excited because on this week's show, I am joined by my favorite movie lover, my favorite lover of movies, and me, my lesbian lover, the Rita to my Betty, Erica Bromley.
Hi.
Hi. I'm teasing the fact that we're talking about Mulholland Drive this week.
We are.
So I wanted to mention the fact that we are lesbian lovers.
We are.
You and I.
Yes.
You're
so feminine.
Thank you. You're not wrong.
No.
Not feminine looking necessarily.
No.
But
your beard is very masculine.
Thank you.
And your sexy moves.
I got moves.
On the dance floor.
Yes. Anyway, thank you for being here to talk about Mulholland Drive this
week.
No
problem.
This show has been in the works for a while.
Oh
we came
gosh.
Close to doing it once.
Yes.
And then it didn't work out. And for whatever reason, you and I are the hardest to coordinate a podcast with, even though we live in the same house.
Right.
And are raising two of the three same children.
I'm not
helping out with that third one.
No, not at all. I don't even know where that one is right now.
Yeah, no, it's fine.
I'm sort of forced to be here because I'm in the house.
That's true.
Yeah, and you just needed,
this is more of a hostage cast.
Someone. No, yeah. Last time we were going to do it, we came close to recording, and then I
think we didn't get to finish watching the movie,
right?
Because you had just graded a stack of papers
and
fell asleep
on the couch.
Something
I was gonna
to
say,
that effect.
Something having to do with falling asleep.
But
on the
now
couch.
It's summer.
Woo!
And now we have all the time in the world. Exactly. So we're going to be talking about Mulholland Drive, spoilery, later on. If you haven't seen it yet, please go out and see it. A couple things before we get into Mulholland Drive. First, we are, the day this podcast posts will be the exact midpoint of Junesploitation, day 15. If you don't know what Junesploitation is, where have you been? It's our month-long celebration of exploitation and genre movies. Every day, a different theme. You can watch any movie from that theme. And then you go to fthismovie.net and find the thread for that day's theme and post about what you watch and talk about other movies that people are watching. There's a whole conversation going there every single day. Go to fthismovie.net. There's a Junesploitation tab at the top of the page. It's been really fun so far. I want to come back to Junesploitation with you, my view.
Okay.
And talk about it in just a minute.
Sure.
So that's one. Two, July 9th. We are hosting our first ever live podcast-a-thon, 18 hours from 8 a.m. Central Standard Time until 2 a.m. Central Standard Time.
Wow.
I will be live at fthismovie.net and on YouTube podcasting for you all to raise money for the Magnolia Tree Foundation, a charity started by a wonderful person who passed away earlier this year of breast cancer, comes from a wonderful family, and we want to do everything we can to raise money for that charity. So there should very soon be a fundraising page up. There will be information about this on ifthismovie.net. There will be a podcast-a-thon tab on the page. You can click on that. You can read about what's in store. You can donate to the cause. You can read more about the Magnolia Tree Foundation and clear your schedule for July 9th because we're going to be on the air all day. We already are planning some pretty cool guests, I think, in addition to all of your favorite F This Movie regulars.
Can I just say that for the past few days especially, but I mean for a while now, but especially the past couple of days, you have worked so hard on getting this together, and it's so cool
You're
to see
embarrassing
it.
Me.
Yeah, but it's so cool to see it come together, and you've been working nonstop, and that's just the sort of thing that, you know, people don't need to know that, but and they'll never see it. They don't see like what you do behind the scenes. Oh my gosh, he's not happy that I'm talking about him in this way right now. He does not like credit. But he really has worked so, so hard, and he's doing so much, and yeah, it's really awesome to see it come together.
Hopefully it is great. We will see.
This
is like a weird experiment. So I'm excited about that.
Cool.
I want to raise a lot of money. I want to put on a good show. I want everyone to tune in and cough up some cabbage. So with those two things out of the way, my love, have you seen anything good lately?
I have not seen as much as I would have liked to have seen because, you know,
school just ended
a
few days ago.
Right. So I was grading like 1,000 papers up until a couple days ago. And then, you know.
So you haven't seen Angry Birds movie?
No.
Haven't seen Warcraft?
Should I just get off the podcast now?
Is that too much to ask? You haven't seen Now You See Me Too?
No, so you haven't.
I mean, you basically haven't seen anything.
The headlines, the reviews for that movie were fun to see pop up in my
feed. They were pretty brutal,
yeah. Oh, my gosh. Yeah. Sad. Okay, so what have I seen, though, lately? I finally saw The Nice Guys.
By the way, I mean, it was like 2 weeks. That's not like crazy.
I know. Some people, someone in my feed just
it's not like, oh, I just got around to seeing
The Force Awakens.
The Battleship Potemkin. Like, what is the big deal with that movie? Yes, absolutely. You did see The Nice Guys.
Yes.
Someone in your feed, what?
Just posted like, oh, finally got around to seeing The Force Awakens. You know, it was hard to get a sitter. Like, what? That's the sort of thing you make it happen. You can find a sitter for that. But I finally saw The Nice Guys and it was really good. I loved it. So funny. I loved the setting. I loved everything about the 70s. I loved my boyfriend, Ryan Gosling. I know. Come on.
You don't have to like talk about the other stuff as a way of just like, oh, yeah, and that.
Listen, I was really into his craft in this film, okay?
He seems talented. Has he been in anything else?
I think he's just a really nice guy.
Maybe. Maybe he's just a really nice guy.
You know, if Russell Crowe
in
his younger years.
Yes.
And Ryan Gosling in his all the years.
Yes.
If they two combined to have a baby.
Yes.
It would be you. Now, wait. Hear me out. Listeners, if you're listening. Anyone?
Listeners, if you're listening.
I've known Patrick for a while, and I've seen baby pictures and things like that, right?
Yeah.
He does resemble Ryan Gosling, which don't make fun of me.
You're blinded.
Blinded.
By
my love.
Your love for me.
Oh.
And also the poison that I've been slipping you nightly.
Yes, Gosling poison. No, Ryan Gosling, he looks right at me a lot of the times. and so I know he's reaching out. And no, but honestly, there's a resemblance. And then also Russell Crowe, like when he was younger and thinner, not Nice Guys Russell
Crowe.
When
he was the best actor, you mean?
Yes.
For Gladiator?
Acting. if those two had a baby, it would be you.
I don't agree, but you're nice to say that.
Russell Gosling.
The movie is good. And
I love it. Oh, my God.
And
so
Ryan Gosling is really funny.
Yeah.
Which, has he ever been like really funny in a movie before?
He's been just funny. I don't know about really funny.
When was he just funny? I mean, Blue Valentine, of course. Of course, Blue Valentine. The Place Beyond the Pines, yes. He's a cut-up.
Okay, has he not been funny?
I can't think of very many comedies he's made.
Talk about Drive?
Oh. He's hilarious in Drive. He's got that wacky elevator scene.
He's just looking right at
me. He's looking right at you.
Oh, my gosh.
He's a real human being and a real hero.
Should we?
Looking right at you. You want a podcast about Drive instead?
Yes, sure.
Okay, it's time. It's time. The new Nicholas Winding Refn movie comes out pretty soon.
Is Ryan Gosling in it?
I don't think he is. And I'm sorry. Keanu Reeves is in it.
Okay.
Dakota Fanning.
Okay.
No, sorry. Elle Fanning.
Okay.
AKA Alice Daynard.
Yes, Alice Daynard. Love it.
I'm excited about it, even though. So far, I think Drive is the only Nicholas Winding Refn movie that I've really responded to.
Okay. Well, I'll go see the new one with you.
I appreciate that.
If you're looking for a date. Yes, no, my mom will babysit.
I feel like maybe that's something you should see alone without me.
Oh, okay.
Well, Gosling's not in it. All right, we can see it together.
Yeah, we'll see it together. Yeah.
No, that's fine. We can see it together. So you like The Nice Guys. You liked the 70s. You liked all
Oh, gosh. Just the jokes. Stuff. Like, the jokes referring to the time period were so funny. Yeah, yeah. And, like, it was great.
It was a weird movie because as it started, I was so, like, primed to love it because I like Shane Black and I like the people in it and I thought the trailers looked good and all that stuff, and I was just excited for like a new Shane Black kind of buddy cop movie because I just love those things.
I know you do.
And the first half hour I'm like, this is entertaining, this is fine, but like it just seems so like not basic but like
hashtag basic,
maybe exactly what I was expecting. I don't know, I just felt like the longer it went on, the more kind of intricate it got and the more complicated. And I actually think it has a lot of stuff to say, but it's never obvious about that stuff. I mean, we talked about it a little bit after you saw it, but there's a lot of like kind of political messages. The fact that it's set in the 70s is not a mistake.
Right.
You know, there's all this stuff about bees. That's like not a mistake. All this stuff about cars. That's not a mistake.
Right.
But it just seems like this goofy little detective movie on the surface, which I think is very impressive.
I agree completely. And this is why you're the critic.
I'm not. I'm the cricket. and what was the other thing that we watched?
The Nora Ephron
documentary.
Everything is Copy. Yeah, it was on HBO.
Yeah, it was on maybe like a month or two ago, and mm-hmm. then we finally got around to watching it on our DVR. What did you think of that?
I thought it was really interesting. I liked learning about but you know what? I like learning about everyone.
You
I
do.
Find
that
everyone
is true.
Interesting.
You do.
It's true. Yeah.
It's your greatest asset and your greatest downfall.
Oh, I know.
Yeah. Yeah. It's your fatal flaw.
No, I guess I don't think a lot of people would love it, but I think writers and people sort of in the industry. I didn't know about her early career at all. And so
I
found that
either.
Very, very interesting. And yeah. I want to go out and read everything she's ever written. I knew about her books, her essays, but I didn't know going back to the beginning.
Yeah. I learned some biographical stuff. I didn't realize who she had been
married to. Yeah, right.
Both of her husbands. I was like, I had no idea she was married to those guys.
Right.
At the same time,
that they were married to her.
That's what I meant to say. What was the real takeaway? Like, I didn't dislike the movie.
Right.
And it was a bunch of people that you know and respect talking about, you know, it gives you a sense of like a world, a circle in which we do not run.
Right.
Just like smart New York writers.
Intellectuals, writers. I know. But you know,
everyone
that I
is
love
wittier
that.
Than yes. the other person. Right. And they're all in kind of like a competition with each other, but they all respect and admire each other. Mm-hmm. And she was kind of the top dog among all of mm-hmm. them. And so that was interesting. I mean, I was always interested and I liked watching old interviews with her. But I just felt like I didn't get, I don't know. I was wondering like what it was that they were going for.
Well, I think, you know, at the end of her life, there was a lot of mystery there because she didn't tell most people, even people who were very, very close to her. She didn't tell them about her illness and that she didn't have a lot of time. And so I think part of it was just kind of to go back and connect all the dots.
Therapeutic,
like, how do we get?
Like,
yeah, maybe. Yeah, for her son, for sure.
Trying to figure out like
absolutely.
Who this person was.
Yes, yes, but also to connect all those dots and like how did she, who enjoyed at times, really enjoyed fame, other times not as much, but then it came to like no information at the end. Like people were completely shocked. She left out some people who were so close to her that they felt really heartbroken beyond just regular, you know,
mourning.
Right. Because they wish that they could have said more, done more.
Maybe I was frustrated because as a movie fan, I wanted them to talk about her movies.
Okay.
And they just completely skipped over a few, like mm-hmm. completely skipped
Which
over
ones
a few.
They skip over?
They completely skipped over. You've Got Mail, basically.
Oh, yeah.
And you can.
But they talked about Sleepless in Seattle a lot.
Maybe
not
a
lot.
Lot.
No,
honestly,
like
I feel
this,
like the one they talked about the most, they talked about When Harry Met Sally a little. The one they talked about the most was Heartburn.
Yes, because it was kind of based
super
on
autobiographical,
her,
but so was This Is My Life, and they didn't talk that much about This Is My Life. They mentioned Mixed Nuts, just Rita Wilson, like, yep, I was in the Nora Ephron bomb, and they moved on. No mention of like Lucky Numbers, which again, I recently saw that movie. It is not good.
Okay.
You watch it and you cannot see any of Nora Ephron in it.
Okay.
But I'm also interested in that.
Right.
But I also understand, I guess, as I'm talking this through, it's making sense to me that like, if the idea is to, paint a picture of her, then maybe talking about this movie that failed, that wasn't personal in any way.
Right,
you know what
right,
I mean?
Right.
This wasn't like an interview.
Yes,
it's not an interview with Nora Ephron, like a movie-by-movie mm-hmm. interview.
Right.
Which then I think she would have talked about.
Right. And I guess that makes sense that you would love for it to be more of that.
Yeah,
and while that also interests me, I
always
just love a nonfiction.
Right. You like watching people interviewed with shelves of books behind them.
Yes, I do.
That's what everyone was in this movie.
Yes.
Just shelves and shelves of books.
I was fascinated by all of their shelves
that they've read and written.
We have shelves of books.
We do. So, we have not
dream accomplished.
We have not written any of them.
No.
But we have read several.
Actually, you're published in one of them.
I am. That's true.
Yeah.
Good point.
Yep.
I don't have like
did you already talk on
what
at this movie about Welcome to Leith?
Yes.
Okay.
It's good though, right?
Different type of documentary. Yes, very good.
Yes.
Fascinating and sad and yeah.
You know a movie we didn't really talk about? Because I had been planning to write a review, and then between June's Exploitation and planning July 9th, a lot of those reviews got away from me. Okay. We saw it at the Chicago Critics Film Festival.
Okay.
And that is the new Ty West movie, In a Valley of Violence.
Yes.
Do you want to talk about that?
Sure. Okay. I loved it. Yeah.
We're good? You loved it?
Yep. Done.
Moving on?
It's a Western.
Yeah. Which you don't, you're not normally
no,
all about
no.
the Westerns.
Although every time we see one that's good, we have
Which
the same.
Which is fairly rare, but.
Right. But we have the same conversation. Well, but I feel like in the past, like, I don't know what. 10 years.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
There's been like
Assassination of Jesse James,
yep.
Which that kid in front of us loved.
Oh, that was so weird.
Two parents brought a very young special needs child to the Assassination of Jesse James by the coward Robert Ford, which is a long movie and a slow movie.
Right.
That and the kid
did not want to be
did not
there
have the patience for,
and,
because
right,
why would he?
Right, and it's not his fault at all, but the parents like didn't care
right.
and were just like, quiet, we want to watch this movie. Like, I think right. they actually at one point just said to him, like, quiet, we're watching this movie. I don't know.
They're the worst. Anyway, yeah. In a Valley of Violence.
Yeah, it was funny.
Yes.
And it was, yeah, that's it. It was funny. It was
all
good.
Right.
That's it. That's
I feel like that was another movie kind of like The
it's
Nice Guys.
It's not opening till October, right?
Is it really October?
I think October.
Oh, geez. I'm sorry, everyone.
Yeah.
But certainly
you could bring
it
up again before
I will.
October. Yeah.
I will.
We could talk about it more in depth.
It's Blumhouse, so I'm excited to see if it kind of gets a wide release. Like, no Ty West movie has ever
right.
gotten an actual wide release.
I was wondering about that, because I
ever.
Know all his movies because of you.
Right.
No one else in my world is talking about
they're
that.
They're not? Go
no,
figure.
No.
Everyone in F This Movie's world
I
is,
know, because
so,
F This Movie has the best people.
We are very cool. It was very much like The Nice Guys, and this, again, is my own fault, where I build these movies up in my head because of who is responsible for making them.
Right.
So I'm watching the first half hour, and it's super entertaining, and there's a great opening credits thing. You know, it's very spaghetti Western inspired. The opening credits and the score, and like it's just it's well shot and it's fun for the first half hour, but it's like, well, this is a pretty straightforward like spaghetti Western
right.
homage.
Mm-hmm.
And then at a certain point it's like, oh, here's this person's voice kicking in, and it turns into something more than what it seemed like at the beginning. Does that
right.
make sense?
Yes.
And The Nice Guys did that exact same thing, where it was like the first half hour is like, this is delivering exactly what I thought, but without any of kind of the nuance or like interesting stuff. And In a Valley of Violence did the same thing. And by the end, yeah, it's like so great. So great.
Yeah.
And Ty West spoke after it, which was very cool
yeah.
because I love listening to him talk.
I knew you would. I did too. And a
well,
lot of his answers
yeah.
reminded me of things that you have said, or not even just no the way
you
it's
give
the,
me too much credit
wait, oh my gosh
I, what I love about
you
his
give
answers,
yourself no credit
that's
ever
fine. Let's fight
he,
about that
this is our
podcast.
First fight no the way that he talked about certain topics which
sure.
This would be more interesting if I could remember them
sure. You were drunk
just reminded me
she was
of,
not drunk
no. I just assume the listeners know that like most of this type of banter is always jokes.
I would hope so, but every once in a while
I know
I
right?
don't want somebody actually thinking that like you were at this movie drunk so
right no or any like right.
I want to clarify she's drunk now but she wasn't at the movie
oh
drunk.
My gosh
listen yeah, I love his answers because they're so like matter of fact. They're so kind of honest, but not
right.
in like a dick way. He'll answer like almost any question, even if it seems like what a stupid question.
Oh,
he'll give an answer yeah. that's like, here's an answer.
Thoughtful.
And it may be very simple. It may be a very straightforward, like, no, I don't think I'll do that. But
mm-hmm.
I like the fact that he entertains the question without right. condescending to
right.
the person.
Right.
And he's thoughtful, but always it always comes from like a weird place of practicality. I don't know. It's super interesting to me because he doesn't talk. He talks about film in a way that I find super interesting, but he doesn't do it in that like film
I'm a
way.
Filmmaker.
Exactly.
Right.
It means whatever you want it to mean, man.
Right.
he's not that guy, but he's not just. Like, yeah, he's not Clint Eastwood, where he was like, I put it in front of the camera and then I shot it. You know, I asked my chair, should we go again? The chair said no. And so I'm going political
yeah, you
on
are.
This week's
mm-hmm.
show. So that was a great movie and everyone should look for it and try to see it in a theater. I don't know if it's one of these movies that's going to be like Blumhouse Tilt, where it just gets dumped like straight to VOD and Netflix.
Mm.
I hope it doesn't because
right.
it's a movie that should be seen
right
theatrically. It's a Western. Every Western should be seen theatrically. Even Texas Rangers, which you and I saw opening night.
We did.
And we're like, I think the only people in the theater.
Oh my gosh.
James
what year,
Vanderbeek?
What year was, yeah, no. That,
very early 2000s,
oh
I think.
Oh my gosh.
Back in the days when we just saw
everything.
Every movie that came
everything.
Out.
Oh,
Rob Schneider movies theatrically. Somehow we missed The Hot Chick. And I've
we
never
did?
Forgiven us. Yeah. Mm. Did not see it in the theater. So I was going to talk about some stuff that I saw during Junesploitation, but I don't really see what the point is.
Because you've been writing about them?
Because I've been writing about them. But I wanted to ask you what it's like. Because you don't get to participate in Junesploitation that much for a couple of reasons. One, you're just super busy. School just got out. And you haven't had time to, like, be watching these movies. But
right.
Two, these aren't the movies that would be your first choice.
Right.
And I'm sure if I was like, hey, let's watch this. Like, in the past, we found middle ground.
Well, yeah, you always find one, though.
Yeah.
But then I'm like, this is so great. And
yeah,
I'm,
yeah,
like,
yeah.
Totally converted.
And we can
night.
Hopefully do that again sometime in the next 15 days.
Right.
So you can at least watch one thing. But I just was wondering for you what the experience has been like. Because you joke all the time about how you're losing me. What is the experience like of watching me go down this weird rabbit hole that you're like, I don't know why you like this stuff? Because
well,
you walked in yesterday.
The other night you had something out there. I was like, what?
Pod. And you came in and you were just like, oh, sounds of screaming and misery or something. Always coming from the TV. Because everything I'm watching is just
right.
like horror
yes.
and violence. But I don't put it on in front of you.
Well,
I wait
you,
until no
you
one's
can.
Around.
Right. No, you can. Of course. I
know,
mean,
but I don't want to.
Oh, you're very thoughtful.
So I try to do it when you're not. So it's not my fault you came home and it happened to be on. I turned it off right away so we could watch Bloodline or something. But
yeah, Bloodline.
I don't know. Is it because I had written something last week about going to that Grindhouse Festival at the Music Box. And at the end, I had said I had thanked you for letting me go all 3 days and basically putting our kids to bed while
aww.
I was at this movie thing. And I said, like, well, you may not always understand the movies I like, but you always understand me.
Yes.
And so, like, you understand why I love this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You just don't understand, like, why I love it.
Thinking,
do you know the distinction?
I knew you were going to. Okay. Yes. Yeah, I know exactly what you mean. I don't can't explain it.
This is why we're married.
But I know. But and it goes for me too. Like, you get why I love all my weird, like, documentaries and nonfiction stuff. And yeah.
Yeah.
You just get me.
I do. I do.
No, but when I say things like that, you're going down a crazy movie. I don't know. Your journey into
mm-hmm. yeah,
your
really,
journey
I'm
into
on this
exploiting.
Journey.
Just like I came in. Okay.
Wait. Hashtag journey.
Journey into movies.
I'm on a journey, everyone.
Everyone's on. I'm on a journey of this Diet Dr. Pepper. I'm drinking. Like really.
It's
okay.
Like a caffeine-free journey. You're on a journey to experience
maybe
life
I
without
have caffeine.
Caffeine.
Okay. When we were friends, and then when we started dating, and then when we were married, and then for years after that, you pretty much, your movie tastes were like always the same through this very long period, because we've known each other for a long time now. And then it started with Star Trek. Like, you became a Trekkie, and it was cute and great, and you wrote about it nonstop, and you, like, loved it. It was great. And then there were these other things that sort of you... Because what I secretly believe is that you're trying to see every movie ever made.
Which is not true.
I know, because we've talked about this, and
yeah.
you've said, no, this is not true. But I still like believing it, because it's cute, and it makes sense, because, of course, you, of all people, should
it
see every movie ever made.
It would be great if I could,
made.
But that's
I
not
know.
The attempt.
I know it's not.
I've tried to figure this out before. I think it has something to do with, like, having, you know, 30-something years of, like, seeing a lot of stuff. And then
yes.
eventually you're like, well, I'm out of all that stuff. Now I need to dig deeper. You know
right.
what I mean? Like,
well,
I don't know.
There are a lot of people listening right now. No. Are there? No.
There might
okay.
be.
There might. I'm just kidding. Yes, there are a lot of people listening who can relate to you in that they, too, grew up loving movies and got their hands on anything they could and read as much as they could. Then there are people listening, and I say this with love. Like, this is not an insult at all, but there are people listening who are also like, yeah, I love movies like that too. And they do in that they've seen a lot, or they might have a few genres or subgenres that they're really into, and so they're like, I'm the one who knows all about this. But like, what people may not know is that you read so much, and that you grew up, like when you were a kid, your family would go on like vacations and they'd go fishing for like 12 hours and you would stay inside and read like comic books or movie books by yourself in the house all day long.
To be fair, I would run out of those books fairly quickly.
So then you would read them again?
So no, then I would read my sister's Babysitter Club books because I was like, I need more content. Listen, I have to consume more. And she has a stack that she's not reading. So yeah, I'll read Claudia and the Phantom Phone Calls.
This is why.
I'll read Christie's Big Idea.
Oh my God.
Okay.
Yes. This is why you're a well-rounded man. And this is why you can relate.
Christie's Big Idea, by the way, number one.
This is why
first
you can
Babysitter's
relate
Club book.
To women.
I can relate to you.
Yes.
Not women.
By
the way, you are a woman. That was not I'm not saying.
Yes, thank you.
Okay.
Okay.
You are a woman, right?
Yeah. Okay. I think so. Yeah. last time I checked. I think that, what am I trying to say? You don't like this because I'm complimenting you.
No,
like,
no, God,
I know,
no.
This
Let's
is
talk
like
about
misery.
Mulholland Drive.
Okay, fine. But my point is that you know so much. You've read so much. It's like constant. It's been since you were very, very young, like a very young age.
Yeah.
And so
I was all like, goo goo, gaga, Truffaut. I was a douche baby.
Like you're only into like, yeah, French New
French
Wave.
French New Wave
yeah.
as a baby. Mm-hmm. It was like, you little pretentious douche.
So your mom had to
Here's
give you that little
bottle. I would like swirl it around and sniff it first.
What kind of notes do you detect in that breast milk?
Oaky and booby. Mostly. My mom had oaky boobs.
It's a hint of
mom,
chocolate.
Don't listen to this podcast.
She
Sometimes
doesn't.
When you're on, she listens.
She does?
She's like, well, they're in love and they're married.
Oh. It's true.
I regret the last 30 seconds. anyway, I'm just trying to get to the bottom of why I've gotten so
yeah, because you,
into
okay,
these movies.
I'm going to summarize it. Because you already know so much and you've already seen so much.
Okay.
Truly, really.
Yeah.
Like, for real. That
truth
this
is, I'm just trying to get you to say this on record so that the next time you're like, I'm losing you, I'm going to be like, you
no,
said.
I,
you said I read as a kid
yes,
and was
no.
with the Truffaut baby
Do I ever,
and the douche.
I don't really... Saying,
oh, not
losing.
Not.
Yeah,
no, it's
no.
in a teasing way.
Oh,
it's
yeah,
never
no,
in like
I
a.
Know.
We're never actually fighting. My
I know.
Goodness.
Oh my God. This is our. We're fighting now.
Well, I like to save it for the podcast because people find this interesting.
I don't think they do.
No, you're right. Should we talk about Mulholland Drive?
Sure.
Let's.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's go back to 2001.
Is that when it came out?
Or was it 2000? I'm going to say
what?
2001.
No.
Yeah, this movie's like 15 years old.
That's, oh my God, that's 15 years.
And again, we were seeing every movie. You tell me as soon as you find it.
Well, my phone is
find
on 3%.
It faster. Okay.
My phone is on 3%, so it's not
so
really
we
up,
were
and
seeing
it's gone.
Everything, and we saw Mulholland Drive, of
yes,
course. We
of
had
course.
To like drive to a faraway theater to see it.
Which one?
It's not
go?
That far
okay.
away. We went to like Yorktown, I think.
Oh, that's not, yeah.
Because it wasn't playing by us
right.
yet.
That's not
eventually,
that far,
I think it
but...
opened up by us, but.
Right.
But
we couldn't wait. We had to see it right away.
Oh, hell no. But talk about your first experience, 2001, with Mulholland Drive, and talk about maybe your overall relationship with the work of David Lynch to get us kind of started.
Sounds of Industry, Piles of Dirt.
We once started to take a class on the work of David Lynch, and we went a few times. And
it was interesting.
It was, but I think at a certain point we were just like, I don't know if we're going to get a ton out of it. And they were showing all movies that we had seen.
Yeah.
And it was like, ah.
I think that's the first time I saw Eraserhead.
It was too many times of seeing Eraserhead for me. I get that movie and I respect it, but it's not a movie I like going back to all that much.
Right.
So were you like a David Lynch fan? How many of his movies had you seen by the time we saw Mulholland Drive?
I know I had seen Lost Highway.
Okay.
I know I had seen Twin Peaks, the show.
Okay, you watched...
Not all of it.
I didn't.
Okay, no, not all. Just
on.
Like, no, not all of it.
Okay.
Not all of it.
Okay.
What else? I think Crash, did he, right?
No.
No, shoot.
You're embarrassing us both
Oh my
right
God,
now.
No.
That's David Cronenberg.
No, I know. Sorry.
Elephant Man.
Lost Highway.
Dune. Wild at Heart. Blue Velvet.
Wild at Heart. Oh, Blue Velvet.
Which is currently playing...
At
the Music
Box
Theater.
Yeah.
It's 30th anniversary.
So I'd seen that.
Okay.
So
were you a David
a
Lynch
ton.
Fan?
In theory.
Okay.
Like, I liked Blue Velvet, and I liked that I didn't totally understand him all the time and the style. You know, like, I liked that, though. Like, that was
We're
going
to come back to that.
Okay. Because you're never quite sure, like, if what you think something means is what he meant
for it to mean. Right.
But it's not done in, like, a schlocky way of, like, try to connect the dot. I don't know how to explain it. It's just his, you just get it that it's like David Lynch. This is his style. This is him.
Yeah, there's no one else like him at all. So we saw Mulholland Drive, and what was your reaction?
I don't remember.
All right, then. Were you drunk?
No.
Is this a problem that's been persisting for 15 years?
Yeah,
oh,
actually,
my gosh.
Short-term memory, yes. No, I remember liking it.
Sure.
I remember thinking that the girls were very, very pretty. I remember.
I didn't notice. I don't notice those kinds of things.
Oh, yeah. Oh, right. I know. Yeah. Good thing I could point it out for you.
That's what you're here for.
I remember kind of like being fascinated by the, I don't know, the whole like tone of the movie and not quite knowing again like what for sure was going on. Silencio. Like, there were so many little things that we quoted from that movie. We still do. And oh my gosh, wait, I'm just going off topic.
That's
kind
okay.
of the person behind the dumpster.
Yeah.
That was like a nightmare.
No. What are you talking about?
But I love it. I love that that stands out too.
We'll come back
head.
To the person
okay.
behind the
okay,
dumpster
yeah.
as well.
So anyway, what did I think? I don't know. I liked it. I was fascinated. I was interested by it in it.
Okay.
But I didn't know what to make of it completely.
Right. Okay. I want to come back to that idea. So it comes out on DVD, and we were living together at that point.
We
bought the DVD, and there's no bonus features on the DVD, but inside mm-hmm. the DVD there's a little sheet, and I wish I had it. I had them pulled up earlier. David Lynch offered like 10 clues into Mulholland Drive. And we had like napkins that we were writing on. We kept looking at his clues because we were determined to like
figure
the movie out.
We took notes on napkins, and I remember at the end of the movie, we were very satisfied. Like, we were like, we figured this out. We got it. And I wish we still had those napkins.
Me too, because I don't think we figured it out.
You don't?
No. Oh. And here's the reason. I don't think there is figuring this movie out. I think to an extent. I think we have the big picture figured out, because even as we watched it again the other night on the Criterion Blu-ray, you know, we were kind of saying like, okay, here's what this is, just in terms of like the chronology of it. But there's all these things, because then we get to the end and there's little people laughing at her and smoke pouring out and she shoots herself in the head. I told you there'd be spoilers. And we're like, okay, so what are these little people supposed to represent?
Right.
You know what I mean? And I think at a certain point, well, that's the thing. At a certain point, the attempt to break it down and say, well, this is this, and this is this, and this is this, falls apart. It doesn't matter.
Right.
And so that's the fascinating thing about the movie for me. Go ahead.
No, just stuff like that.
Yeah.
Just makes you as a viewer feel uneasy or just, I don't know,
yeah.
feel a certain way. And I like it when a movie does that. Now, I know that there are probably so many people who went to see it and were just like, what is this? And didn't care. Like, it didn't make them feel anything.
Right.
They don't respond to that kind of sort of offbeat weirdness. I don't know. Like,
yes. And I also think there's just not just as many, but there's also a lot of people
who want it
to push further in that direction, who only like movies that are abstract and that are just about weird dream logic and imagery and how does this make me feel. And I tend to resist that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I've gotten a little bit better at it in recent years. I've tried to be a little bit better about it, but I'm a pretty like, I'm big on like story and structure mm-hmm. and characters and those kinds of, you know, I like a catchy pop song that there's a structure to, you know,
right.
like I can't wrap my head around Sonic Youth or whatever, you know, I'm like, I respect what this is. It's just not to my taste. And so obviously I think with movies, I'm more adventurous, but for whatever reason, David Lynch has been one of the only filmmakers kind of that style that I tend to respond to. Mm-hmm. Where, so that's kind of where I wanted to start, was like, are you okay? Can you still love a movie and not get it? Can you specifically? I mean, I know people can, but I'm asking you specifically.
Yes.
Can you not get a movie and still love it?
Yes, I think I can.
Okay.
I think I have. I wish I could think of examples.
I was going to ask you for others. Yeah.
Well, like, even this is like not in the same category.
Is it Jurassic World? Is it?
I just didn't get it. Cloud Atlas.
There's no dinosaurs.
Cloud Atlas is a movie that, like, I got. Like, it's not. Yeah. It's not. Yeah, but there were things that were, I don't know.
Well, there's certainly things in that movie that I think are appealing more to your emotion than your intellect.
There you go. Done.
Which is okay.
Done.
You know?
Yes.
And you have to be willing to let go of certain things if a movie is trying to do that. Because, yes, if you start engaging with it purely intellectually, you can say, well, why is this? And why? Mm-hmm. That's when you start finding, you know, bullshit plot holes or whatever. But again, that varies on a movie-to-movie basis because there are plenty of movies that want to work on you emotionally that you resist because you're like, well, this is phony. This is sentimental. This is manipulative. You know, sometimes you don't mind being manipulated, and sometimes you're like, fuck
sometimes,
this.
Right, I can't get past it. And
right,
I can't
exactly.
give anything else a chance. Right.
So Cloud Atlas is an instance where, like, okay, yeah, I'm willing to go along with this.
Right.
I think, and I'm not positive, I go back and forth on what I think Mulholland Drive is David Lynch's best movie. I go back and forth on whether or not it's my favorite David Lynch movie.
What else is in the running?
Lost Highway, for sure. Okay. I really, really love Lost Highway.
I would like to watch that again.
It's so
I haven't seen it since college.
So good. It's one of the only movies that ever kept me up at night. The day I saw it, and I saw it by myself in the middle of the day, like almost by myself in a theater. And there's a movie that demands to be seen in a theater because it's so quiet, because the sound design is so specific, because it's so dark.
Mm-hmm.
You almost can't see what's going on at home, you know, in a movie theater. It's a lot easier. I wish that movie would play like revivals more often because I would totally go see it. But I was awake at night trying to figure out that movie. And by the way, I was so wrong. Like the solution that I came up with, that I was like, okay, I think that's what it is. Like a few years later, I was like, oh, no, it's very clearly this. And it's actually a lot like Mulholland Drive.
Okay.
Like they're almost the same movie.
Really?
Yes.
Okay.
In terms of a huge piece of the movie being an elaborately constructed fantasy or dream to escape the guilt of of somebody committing a murder, basically. In Lost Highway, it's a husband murdering his wife and then constructing this elaborate fantasy to deal with his guilt. In Mulholland Drive, the first two-thirds of the movie, which, by the way, watching it the other night, I was positive that, like, it's half and half. That it's half dream fantasy and then half, like, here's what really happened.
Okay.
It's like the last 20 minutes are here's what really happened.
Right.
Almost the entire movie is the fantasy.
The lamp.
Yes, the lamp.
The lamp.
The lamp was one of the clues,
yes.
One of the David Lynch clues.
Right.
And the lamp kind of tells you, it's like the lamp, the coffee cup, and the bathrobe or something. And when you see those three things, you know that it's Naomi Watts as Diane Selwyn in present day, flashing back to what really happened post 90-minute fantasy sequence.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. So I think it's his best movie. And I would argue, and I could be wrong, I think it's one of the best movies of the
2000s. Okay.
I think I could almost make a case that it's the best movie of the 2000s.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Like, I think this movie is so bonkers great. And here's the amazing thing about David Lynch. And again, if you're listening to this podcast, you probably already know the backstory of Mulholland Drive. But here's what's fucking incredible about David Lynch. And I apologize for cursing, my dear.
What?
So it starts out as a pilot for a show on ABC. And it's he shoots a 90-minute pilot. And ABC passes on it.
Mm.
And so then he kind of turns that into a movie, and essentially the whole fantasy sequence is the pilot for the show, and you can 100% see it if you know that as you rewatch it. And then when he turns it into a movie, he adds the, you know, coda at the end. I mean, he adds some additional scenes. But then the stuff where it's Naomi Watts fantasizing about it, and then the flashbacks to what really happened are the stuff that he kind of adds in to make it a movie. And the fact that he's like able to do that and tie it all in such a way, the construction of it is so sophisticated. The feel of it is so weird and dreamlike. And, you know, so many people, when a movie doesn't make narrative sense or whatever, it feels like a dream. Like, David Lynch is one of the only people that can genuinely get away with that. Like, it feels like a dream. And then the fact that, like, it all means something. It's like those last 20 minutes change the meaning of the movie and turn it into something else completely. And the fact that he's able to do that is so incredible to me. I don't know. I think he's like one of the all-time greats. And I don't even love every one of his movies, you know? But honestly, if you just gave me... I respect and admire Eraserhead, so I'll put that on the list. But if you just gave me Lost Highway, Mulholland Drive, Wild at Heart, and Blue Velvet, those are kind of the four David Lynchiest, because I'm not a huge Inland Empire fan.
Okay.
And I enjoy Dune, but it's not a David Lynch movie. And The Elephant Man's good, but whatever. But those four movies, you know, and Twin Peaks, I'll put that on there. Like, those five things. That body of work is like, I'd put that up against almost anything ever.
Wow.
So Mulholland Drive. Oh, so I want to talk about this, and then we can talk about some specific scenes.
Okay.
Because here's why it's so great. The first 90 minutes is set up basically as the pilot to a show. Mm-hmm. And so that's why there's all this weird mystery. Mm-hmm. They keep introducing these new characters and like the start of a storyline that doesn't necessarily ever pay off.
Right.
Now, again, at the end, he kind of figures out a way to make certain things pay off.
Right.
But you can absolutely see that as like he's just introducing these characters and their own separate storylines. And so it's about, you know, this actress who crashes in Mulholland Drive and gets amnesia, and she meets Betty, Naomi Watts, and they are trying to solve a mystery together. And then there's a separate story about Justin Theroux as this director who's being forced against his will to cast a lead actress. And there's a separate story of Mark Pellegrino, I want to say is his name, the guy that played Jacob on Lost, who's the hitman who shoots a guy, and then that goes wrong, and he ends up having to kill two more people, and we don't know who this hitman is, or you know what I mean? Like, by the end of the movie, again, he has a new function, because now he's the guy who's hired to kill Rita, whose real name is something else. Laura Elena Herring, he ends up being the guy who's hired to kill her. So there's all these mysteries that are set up, and that's JB has pointed out before that some of the genius of David Lynch is that he pulls you along for the ride, like on Twin Peaks. He can get away with all the weird dream stuff because at its core, it's a mystery. Blue Velvet is like that. Lost Highway is like that. Twin Peaks is like that. Mulholland Drive is like that. We're able to take these weird tangents because we have this thread of a mystery driving us.
Sure.
So Howard Hawks once says, a great movie is three good scenes and no bad scenes or something like that.
Okay.
I mean, Mulholland Drive passes that test like times 10.
Right.
Because the scenes, it's almost, again, those first 90 minutes, it's almost just these little individual scenes.
Which I bet was not appealing to some people.
Really?
Right? Yeah, I think, well, because we had a wide-ish release, right?
Yeah.
So I'm sure some people went for the mystery, but they don't like that so many things are disconnected or that some things don't really wrap up or we don't know what happens or they don't explain that. Why did that happen?
Yeah, that I could understand.
Well, I mean, I can understand it, but I wish people could be more open to just accepting,
of course,
you know,
me too,
like,
yeah,
this is what this is. You know?
I feel like in the moment, like, how can they be frustrated? Okay, by the end, if it doesn't pay off, then they're like, this is like Lost. But in the moment, each scene is so great and compelling. So you have the scene with Justin Theroux as the director who's sitting down with these two businessmen that he does not know, Dan Hedaya and Angelo Badalamenti, the composer, plays the other guy, and they just keep saying, "This is the girl," and they're forcing mm-hmm. him to cast someone, and then Angelo Badalamenti has the great thing with the cappuccino. They're all nervous about giving, and he spits it out onto a napkin. It's like hilarious. And so that's just, that's David Lynch expressing frustration about the way that Hollywood works.
Right.
And that's just, again, what's going on and why is he being forced to cast this girl? But that's interesting and compelling. You have the scene, Naomi Watts auditioning for the part in a movie. Do you know what I'm talking about? With the soap
yes.
opera
oh,
actor.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. When he says, "We're going to play this one close."
Yeah. And he's like so gross
yeah,
and
right.
sleazy.
Right.
And then she completely turns it around on mm-hmm. him and takes over the room. And the genius of that performance is that Lynch has shown us her do that scene where she's practicing it with Laura Elena Herring. The way any of us would, the way any actor would like interpret those lines,
right.
It's like, it's super generic.
Mm-hmm.
And then she goes in and reads the room and does it like very sexual,
mm-hmm.
I guess.
Yeah. Seductive.
Right. And it's like the most compelling thing ever. and it's, so that's a great scene. You have the scene, there's a band, but there is no band. And the woman singing Roy Orbison's Crying in Spanish.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
And the two girls are getting increasingly, they're crying and they don't understand why. And they're getting afraid and they don't understand why. And again, in the moment, you're like, what? You're responding to it.
Right.
Like so directly and so viscerally, but you don't really know why.
Right.
And again, that's the mark of a great filmmaker. And then we're watching it the other night and I'm like, oh, this is the fantasy breaking down. This
right.
is the fantasy ending. And
oh,
that's why
God.
They're
yeah.
so sad because
sad
they realize
yeah.
it's such a sad movie.
Right.
It's like a heartbreakingly sad movie because it is just
right.
about this girl who comes to Los Angeles to be an actress. She wins a jitterbug contest, comes to Los Angeles to be an actress, falls in love with another actress, has her heart destroyed, has her dreams crushed, has this woman murdered because she's so distraught, and then kills herself. Like,
oh.
It's the saddest story ever. But for almost 2 hours of its running time, it's just this weird abstract mystery,
mm-hmm.
So you have that great scene when they're in this nightclub watching this mm-hmm. performance. And then we have the scene that there are other great scenes that we could talk about that I love.
Right.
But the one that I want to get to is the scene in Winkies with two characters who we don't really see
no.
elsewhere in the movie. And one is describing a dream to another man. And they say, okay, let's go out back and see if this scary person is there that you saw in your dream. And yes, the scary person is there. And again, the genius of the scene is that it takes place in broad daylight. That the actual person, who you don't really see all that well, is a nightmare person.
Yeah, right. Oh, gosh.
In such a specific, weird way, where it's just like, it just looks like the trash heap from Fraggle Rock. Like, you don't understand why it's scary, but it's so scary.
Just the way it comes out, yeah.
Right. And
it, I'm saying it.
The timing of it, too, because Lynch draws it out long enough that you start to think you're not going to see it.
Mm-hmm.
It's like Ben Stiller's dick and There's Something About Mary. They draw it out long enough that you tell yourself, okay, they're not going to show it.
Right.
And that's when they show it.
Right.
And that's what Lynch does. He draws it out long enough that you're like, okay, you're worried. And then you let your guard down and you're like, okay, if there was something there, he would have shown us by now. And then bam, that's when the thing steps out. And it's the scariest thing you've ever seen. Why is that scene in the movie?
I don't know.
Okay.
That scene in the movie just to put us like on edge?
Maybe. Yeah, I don't know.
I
don't have an answer.
Yeah.
This, I'm not like testing you.
No.
You failed.
Oops. I mean, that really does like... That scene really does like fit with your theory of how much of it was the pilot that he just had to like use, you know? So this was going to set something up in the show that was not going to ever be then, you know? So,
But at the same time,
but he leaves it in.
Exactly.
See, so that's a choice.
Exactly.
Right. That's a choice.
He didn't just say like, well, I'll tack this onto the pilot. Like he went back and said, what stays and what goes and makes a choice. Exactly. Right. Like you said, to leave it in. So why, you know what I mean?
Right.
Like, and the weird trash heap monster comes back a few more times in the movie. It's one of the last things we see in the movie. Mm-hmm. At one point, Betty sees what we, or she's Diane at that point. What looks like the trash heap monster, but it's just like a homeless person, right? So in a way, it's Lynch, because we also see the guy from Winkies standing in Winkies. So in those last 20, 30 minutes, he gives us a bunch of like, oh, and that's where she got this from in the dream. And that's where she got this guy from. And this is where the trash heap monster comes from. This homeless guy on the street. I don't need as much of that. There's a, like, I won't say there's too much of it, but like there's a little bit of like, got to make sure I connect these
dots.
But
I don't, the first time viewing, I don't think it came across as heavy handed as that.
Right.
I don't think it felt that way. I think only after repeated viewings now and really trying to figure it out.
Yeah. I know there's all these theories online and I didn't really want to read them because I didn't want
to. What are they? I don't
know. Well, I honestly didn't want to read them that much because I didn't want it to like color our discussion.
Right.
And I also, I don't know, sometimes I read this stuff online. I'm just like, these are dumb.
Well, people can also just make stuff up.
And that's what they're doing, you know? And like you might find one that you agree with. I remember when Enemy came out, and we've talked about it a bunch now because there's this one like YouTube video that has a great explanation of what I think is going on in Enemy. But before I arrived at that, I remember reading something from Slate that was like, it took the movie so literally, and it was just like, aliens have invaded in the form of giant spiders. Like, that's not what's going on in this movie, guys. So I know that there are theories about there for, like, here's what Trash Monster represents, and I'm sure that some people will talk about them in the comments under this podcast, which is great.
Yay. I look forward to reading them.
Yeah. I mean, my
The
only way that I've ever been able to sort of contextualize it is this idea of, like, because so much of the movie is about kind of what a terrible place Hollywood is, right? And what it does to people.
Right.
Justin Theroux is forced to make the movie he doesn't want to make. Mm-hmm. And Diane has her dreams crushed and she's manipulated by another actress and then openly mocked at this party at the end. And
that scene.
The actor that she's auditioning with is a sleaze who's like, let's play this real close, baby. Mm-hmm. I mean, everybody is kind of the worst, right?
It's not.
And so it's this idea that like, A, there's ugliness around every corner. In Hollywood, in Los Angeles.
Right.
And also, there are little hints throughout the movie, I think. And I think Lost Highway, I think being a fan of Lost Highway even informs a little bit of how I read Mulholland Drive, because Lost Highway is filled with moments where it seems like the fantasy is going to unravel. Throughout Lost Highway, the truth keeps trying to push through the dream. And there's some moments of that, I think, during the fantasy in Mulholland Drive, including when they go to the apartment and there's a dead body in the bed, like Diane Selwyn's dead body is in the bed, which ends up being Naomi Watts at the end of the movie. Mm. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, and so there's a moment where it's like reality is almost pushing through. So it's this idea of like, sooner or later, the ugliness is going to reveal itself.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Right.
I don't know. I don't know if it's supposed to be that symbolic or if it literally is just David Lynch being like, well, this is fucking scary.
Yeah, no, and I always did take it as having a lot to do with Hollywood. And then just watching
everybody got a dream. What's your dream?
I was going to mention that guy as the garbage monster was equivalent to that guy coming around, popping up and coming around at the end and kind of wrapping it up for us. We've come full circle. I was seriously just going to, but I didn't want to, you were saying something really important. I didn't want to interrupt and be like, hey, in Pretty Woman, remember? Stop right now.
So I mean, that's like the way that I've sort of interpreted that scene.
But watching it the other night, made me think again of how relevant it still is, like in terms of all the Hollywood.
In terms of its critique about Hollywood.
Yeah.
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 Well, and look at it this way. David Lynch essentially made one more movie. He made Inland Empire, which was like super independent, shot on video, 3 hours long, impenetrable for, yeah, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
And left. Yeah. Like, he's done.
What does he do now?
I don't know. He showed up on Louis for that really funny arc when he was coaching Louis on how to be on the,
yes,
Tonight Show, or
oh
the
God,
takeover for Letterman.
Right.
I don't know what he, I mean, he, right, does art, he does photography. I mean, right, he's just a great, great person. He's super into like transcendental meditation. I know he does a lot with that. He's just like,
okay,
such a weirdo. And now he's doing Twin Peaks, you know, so,
right,
that's coming back, and he's directing all of those.
He is.
He is.
All of those?
All of those.
Okay.
Which is like beyond exciting. So I don't know, but so it's interesting that this is one of his last movies that ends up being kind of this fuck you to Hollywood.
Right.
I don't know, because then I question sometimes, like, do I need to figure that out? Do I need to sit down and figure out what that means? Or can I just let it affect me on an emotional level? Do I have to intellectualize everything?
No, I think, but both of those are okay. Like, we both enjoyed the napkin night, you know, like trying to figure that out.
As it is now called.
I think anytime someone's trying to really figure out a movie,
it's,
that should be the new thing.
Night.
Hashtag, yeah, napkin night.
Napkin night also sounds like a night where like somebody jerks off 5 times.
Oh gosh. So like why? Why? I like knew maybe it was going to go there. I tried to, tried to abstain.
Anyway.
So yeah, no, but like, why can't it be both? Like, if you want it to be, or what I'm saying is that you don't have whatever.
But I'm trying to like figure this out.
Like you personally, like,
yeah, for me, okay. I'm not talking about, I don't care about how other people, mm-hmm, watch movies. Cool. I'm genuinely trying to figure it out for me. Do I need to, because the tiny bit of reading that I started to do on Mulholland Drive this afternoon, which, by the way, was about 90 seconds because it wasn't fair to you,
yeah,
to read,
jeez,
a bunch about it.
Right?
I know. It wasn't fair. The tiny bit was like the Wikipedia page, and it gave explanations for the symbols in everything.
Oh,
and
wow.
I'm like, is that necessary?
Right.
I mean, maybe.
Right.
If that helps you process your feelings about a movie, okay. Do I need to understand what the old people represent at the end of the movie?
What do they represent?
I don't know.
No.
I don't know.
I think some people
said it was her parents.
Okay, I think some people just really enjoy that kind of stuff because it makes them feel like they're really figuring something out.
It's like solving a puzzle.
Yes. And so that's fun for some people who, I don't know, maybe need a little more to get into a movie like that.
Let me ask you this question.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say we sit there and we pick this movie apart two more hours.
Okay.
We're not going to, you will fall asleep if we do that. So we're not going to do that. But let's say we do and we feel like we've solved it. We've,
mm-hmm,
we've solved the puzzle. The next time you go to watch it, does it still work on an emotional level?
I don't know the answer to that.
Okay. Do you know what I mean though?
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you deconstruct something enough, it's not the thing anymore. You've ripped out all of its insides and picked them apart and studied them under a microscope, but you can't ever put them back together, so it's the thing anymore.
You can put them back together, but it's not the same?
I don't know. I haven't ever really done that with the movie.
Right, I'm trying to think.
Where I've broken it down to that degree, because,
like, what can you think of that you go back to and you still have the same emotional response? Josie and the Pussycats,
of
right?
course.
For you, yeah.
100%.
Okay.
No, lots of stuff.
Right.
I still have the same.
You still have the
Joe versus the Volcano.
Oh, yeah.
True Romance,
oh,
That
yeah.
Thing You Do,
oh,
Streets of Fire,
yeah.
Mulholland Drive.
Oh.
I have the same emotional responses to a lot of stuff.
Right.
Probably not to, like, Meet Joe Black.
Oh, okay.
I don't think I'm going to be
the only one
a weepy mess.
Right.
I mean, it's still, parts of it still work on me, but it was one of those where, like, on the day, it was like, well, this movie is doing it.
Oh, my gosh.
What
year did that come out?
98.
When did There's Something About Mary come out?
98. Yeah. Yeah. You do that math. You do the math. I just don't know if I sit there and say, okay, well, the old people, they represent her parents. And at the beginning, when she's riding with them in the limo, and then we cut away, and then they're just smiling each other in that weird way. I think this is what Lynch is saying.
So
and then
weird.
At the end, oh,
so
it's super weird.
Weird.
And part of me is like, he doesn't need, Lynch isn't doing it because it means something. He's doing it because it creates a response. Do you know what I mean? Like, maybe everything has a purpose. Maybe everything is motivated. Maybe everything symbolizes something else in his brain. I don't know. Or maybe he's just like, well, this is kind of weird, and I kind of like how this makes me feel, so right. I'm going to drop this in here.
Right.
These two old people who've been directed to just stare and smile at one another. And then at the end, they're very tiny, and they chase her into the apartment, and she kills herself.
Oh my
so if
gosh.
I sit there and say, like, well, what? They're her parents, and they're the memory of her parents, and so then when they're shrunk down, it's because she's trying to really compress that memory, and so she's made them small. I could come up with, you know, mm-hmm. some bullshit explanation. The next time I watch it, is it going to feel nightmarish? Or is it going to feel like I'm just patting myself on the back because I'm like, haha, I know what that is. I don't know.
It depends on if you watch it late at night with the lights out or if you're watching it during the day.
It's nightmarish any time of day. Any time of day.
Speaking of nightmarish, yes. I can't read to you what I was going to read to you because my phone died. But right before we started recording, I found something from, I think, Vulture that said that Mulholland Drive was like the best – one of the best horror movies of all time, or
maybe.
I don't know. It died. My phone died.
Yeah.
But did you always classify it as a horror movie?
No.
Okay.
I don't. Just like I don't necessarily classify Lost Highway as a horror movie, even though I think both are super influenced by horror movies and evoke a lot of the same emotional responses in terms of a feeling of dread. A feeling of like, this is not going to go someplace good.
Right.
And Mulholland Drive obviously has one of the scariest images in a movie in a long time with the garbage monster. So I understand why people are quick to say, well, it's a horror movie. And I didn't read the Vulture piece, and they may have mm-hmm. a whole argument for why
right.
it's a horror movie.
I didn't
movie.
Get to read it either.
I don't know. I mean, what would I call it? A mystery? Mm-hmm. You know, I tend to yeah. just classify David Lynch as David Lynch
right,
because
right.
he is his own category.
Right.
You know, he's somebody that you could compare other work to. You would say, well, it's kind of like a David Lynch movie. Mm-hmm. And somebody would say, oh, okay, I know what that means.
Right.
You can't compare his work to anything else.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And one of the things that I love about Mulholland Drive, and it's the same thing that he does in Blue Velvet, and it's one of the things that I love most about David Lynch, is that he does it on Twin Peaks. He does it to an extent in Wild at Heart. He doesn't really do it in Lost Highway. In Lost Highway, everyone is kind of dark and brooding, and it's much more informed by, like, old film noir. But Blue Velvet, Mulholland Drive, Twin Peaks, sort of Wild at Heart. There's this squeaky cleanness to some of the stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Betty is such
oh my gosh
a naive, sweet, square girl,
right,
to the extent that when she does the audition and it becomes very sexy, it's like, well, where did this come from? Just as the characters in Blue Velvet are, just as several of the characters on Twin Peaks are, it's this weird old-fashioned Americana.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not ironic. He's not putting it out there like, this is lame, and now I'm going to show you the dark underside that
right.
exists, even though that's
right.
what he's doing in all of his work. It's
right.
always, it's that contrasted with really dark shit.
Mm-hmm.
But he's not doing that to take the piss out of the squeaky clean Americana, and he's not saying like, this is a sham, this is stupid, and we need to tear this down because what lies underneath is darkness. He loves the squeaky clean Americana. He kind of is
right.
that when you hear him talk.
Right.
And I love that those two things coexist simultaneously within him.
Right.
I'm so fascinated by that. And I love that so much because there's such a sincerity and an innocence to that stuff.
Right. Well, he,
and then
yeah.
there's such weird darkness at the same time.
It all comes from such a genuine place though. From him, like, you just know that this is really who he is.
Yeah.
It's not, It's not part of a trend.
But there will never be another. I'm not saying like there won't ever be somebody who is singular in the way that David Lynch is or who does something similar. But I remember, I can't remember. I had this, it wasn't an argument, but I remember with Doug, I remember saying once, like, there will never be another thing like this. And he was like, well, you can't say that, but you can. I feel like you can say that there will never be another David Lynch. There will never be someone.
Okay, well, I mean, we don't know for sure.
But we do. I mean, right? There might be somebody who's like David Lynch.
Right.
Whose films
Or trying
work.
To be. I think there's
well,
definitely.
That, see, that,
you're definitely going to find someone in every film school who's trying to be.
But they don't understand. I would say the majority of the people who want to be David Lynch do not understand what makes David Lynch work.
Right.
And they think it's like just weirdness for weirdness's sake.
Right, exactly.
And you can see right through that shit.
Right. But and going back to how you said that that's genuinely who he is with like it's non-ironic and all his Americana squeaky clean. Like that's, that's a part of who he is.
Right.
Which makes it all more even more interesting.
Yeah. Like there just there won't ever be another filmmaker whose brain works the way his does.
Right.
And I don't know. I just think there's so, I mean, there are great filmmakers, you know, when Scorsese makes a movie, he's a master at like composing shots and editing and the way he tells his stories and his characters are really well drawn. But like, I could never do what Scorsese does, but I can understand it. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? Like,
okay.
I do not have 1/1000th of his talent, his technical proficiency, his knowledge, any of that stuff. But it still makes sense to me on paper. I still can see how it all comes together, right?
Yes.
I don't know. I you know, there are a few filmmakers whose brain just works in a different way. David Cronenberg is like that a little bit.
Right.
But
even Hitchcock,
none more
even
so
Hitchcock,
than David Lynch.
Though, I think it goes along with your theory that like you kind of understand.
Yeah.
Get it, even though
he does it the best,
right?
But you can still see it how it's put together, and you still can wrap your head around it. David Lynch, I can't wrap my head around in a good way.
Right.
It's not like I don't
That's
understand.
That's exactly
this.
It. You can't wrap your head around it,
and you almost don't want to. Like you just I don't know. There's stuff that I'm willing to just surrender myself to, and that was the thing about Lost Highway because I did not get it, and I saw it twice the same day. I went back that night to see it again. Did not understand it, didn't care. I was just there for the experience that the movie put me through. And to some extent, I'm the same way with Mulholland Drive. Even though I don't think I get every aspect of it, I don't exactly understand who the cowboy is. And that's another instance where later on, Betty's at a dinner, that kind of humiliating dinner, and the cowboy walks by in the background. And so is it really supposed to be like, well, she saw that guy, and so she worked him in. Because, again, he's part of the pilot part of the movie where it's like he's, you know, out of Twin Peaks. And that would have come up again. But the movie changed shape and it became this thing. And I also we're going to have to wrap up here. But I was watching the other night because I remember seeing it in a theater. And I remember it feeling cinematic, not in the way that Lost Highway feels cinematic. Lost Highway is, like I said, shot very dark. You know, 2.35 widescreen uses sound design in such a way that like really benefits from the theatrical experience, which isn't to say that Mulholland Drive doesn't use sound design as well, but Lost Highway is a very cinematic movie.
Yeah.
And I was watching Mulholland Drive trying to figure out like, okay, is this cinematic as well? Because we know this was actually made for TV.
Mm-hmm.
And I will agree, it's not as cinematic, but at the same time, like, does the aesthetic that Lynch is using still work as a movie, or does it feel like a TV movie that somebody showed in theaters to you? it's late.
No, the reason that I sigh is because TV now is different from TV then.
Yeah.
So TV now...
And that TV now is more cinematic?
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
So I can't answer that question. Like,
okay.
It's... Okay. Now there are so many shows that do...
Sorry, I don't know what just happened.
Your phone is going crazy. Yeah. There are so many shows that do all of that intentionally, right? They try to... well, first of all, in a cinematic way, and then like put together like pieces of a mystery and kind of pique your interest.
Sure. Right.
I don't know. So I guess when I was watching it again the other night, it did. I thought like, oh, this could be on TV now. This could be someone would pick this up.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
But it was different.
And actually, except for like the two kind of nude scenes or sex scenes,
mm-hmm.
mm-hmm. There's not much in the movie that couldn't be on
right
TV. There's some violence that happens in the beginning again when Mark, I think it's Mark Pellegrino, when he shoots the people, but it's fairly bloodless violence.
Oh, right. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it's almost played for laughs.
Because she is first like fighting back and sort of like.
Right. Well, first she thinks something bit her.
Right.
So it's almost kind of played mm-hmm. comic, but I don't remember
right.
there
he's
being like
sort of buffoony.
Right. I don't remember there being a lot of like curse words. There's not a lot of graphic violence that I can remember. A majority of kind of the deaths in the movie take place off screen.
Right.
So it's just really those two sex scenes.
Yeah.
And I want to ask about those. What's your takeaway on those? The two sections. One happens in the fantasy.
Uh-huh.
One happens in real life.
The one in the fantasy is great, and the one in real life ends up being really depressing, right?
Right.
Like, doesn't it?
Because she says, like, we can't do this anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it kind of breaks up with her.
Yeah, basically.
In the middle.
Again, I just think there's something interesting. It's him again sort of contrasting this idea of, because they're introduced almost as like, you know, Betty and Veronica types, because you have mm-hmm. one whose literal name is Betty and she's kind of blonde and all American, even though she's from Canada.
Right.
And the character is from Canada. The actress is from Australia. And then you have Laura Elena Herring, who's very dark and a very different type. And she's more of a Veronica type, but they're like teen crime solvers. They're like dueling Nancy Drews.
Yeah.
And there's such an innocence to that.
Right.
And then all of a sudden they're naked in bed together.
Right.
And again, that contrast is interesting to me. But that watching that scene, again, you have Betty saying, I'm in love with you, more than once.
Yes, yes.
And Rita never says it back.
Right.
And so there's another instance where the dream, the fantasy still won't indulge Diane all the way.
Right, right, right.
Even
yeah.
when she's fantasizing, she still can't commit all the way to like get fake Rita to say I love you back.
Right.
And that made me so sad mm-hmm. watching it.
Yeah. It stood out to me more the other night, like that she says it again and again.
And never hears it back.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Anyway, I know we could talk about this movie all night and I feel bad because it's one of these movies that like I've wanted to do a podcast on. I've wanted to talk about it with you,
mm-hmm.
but I also am like, we can't do it justice. You know what I mean?
Right. No, I know. I'm curious to see what people are going to say. Like, I don't know. Do you think a lot of people that comment on if this movie have seen this movie?
Yes. Oh, sure.
Yeah. Okay.
And my goal, and I think we accomplished my goal, which was to have a discussion about the movie, not the discussion about the movie. And there has to be a distinction there because sometimes
you could have so many different discussions.
Well, that's
the
thing. Like sometimes I set out to like, let's have kind of a definitive discussion about this one movie and then kind of put that movie to bed as far as that this movie mm-hmm. goes. And Mulholland Drive, I had no such ambitions because we just have kind of skimmed the surface and we kind of touched on these other almost tangential questions and ideas, as far as the movie goes. But I will repeat that I love this movie very much. It is a movie that is, we always make our top 10 lists, and we've been making our top 10 lists since like the 90s.
Since the 90s. Notebooks.
I don't think I put this as like my number one the year it came out.
Okay.
I don't remember what I put as my number one. But again, it's one of these interesting phenomenons where I could look at my top 10 list from 2001 and 8 of the movies, like, I've never gone back to watch, and I have not thought about, you know, but at the end of 2001, I was like, this movie.
Right.
And the ones that, there's only a few every year that kind of pull away and stand out, and Mulholland Drive is one that just continues to grow and grow in my estimation. So I'm super excited about Twin Peaks. I'm a little nervous because every piece of news is like, this famous person is joining and this famous person is going to be on. And it's like, I don't want it to just be spot the cameo.
Right, right.
The way that like that Netflix season of Arrested Development was a little bit. Mm-hmm. But I'm super excited about it.
Yeah. Well, I think, like you said, this is just a conversation about the movie. There's so much more. Even we didn't even really get into the fact that they are a lesbian couple in her dream.
Right. But also in real life.
And also in real life. But that it's not really called attention to much.
Sure.
And that's great. But I feel like back then, I'm just surprised. I don't know. I don't know.
Back then, like 2001?
Yes. It wasn't that long ago, but it feels like the world has changed a lot. Because
it absolutely has. It absolutely has.
And for better.
In many ways for
in
better.
In many ways.
In many ways for better.
I
feel like, you know, in some ways, that's what the movie was known for, though.
Oh, okay.
Was that sex scene. It's like, it's this movie with this sex scene with these two very beautiful actresses, and they're both kind of famous, although not really. Like, what has Laura Elena Herring? She hasn't done a ton since.
No.
But it was one of those things where, I feel like even people who wouldn't normally see a David Lynch movie were like, well, I'll check this
one out. Well, I'll go,
And
they look sexy in the
trailer. Surely they were disappointed. To the extent that when the movie came out on DVD, I think Universal put out the DVD, there were no chapter stops. Like, Lynch was almost like, fuck you if that's how you're going to watch my movie. Because you're not skipping ahead to the sex scene.
Right, right.
And I didn't test out the Blu-ray. There may be chapter stops. Okay. I honestly don't know.
We'll
I feel
go
like
up and test it out
Yeah,
now.
Maybe.
Okay.
But I think that's so funny that, like, you're punished. If that's your goal, like, sorry, you're going to have to watch this movie.
Right. But so, like I'm, my point was in bringing that up was just that we had a discussion. There's so many other, like, fine points or, you know, that could be discussed.
Absolutely.
And maybe if we had our napkins, we could talk about more of them. We have failed.
I want to say
we
that
didn't
I'm proud
keep
of us
the napkins.
For not holding on to napkins through two or three moves
proud
in 15
of us.
Years.
I am shocked that I didn't.
No, like, I'm proud
of you. They're
going to
turn up somewhere.
No, they definitely are. If they do, we'll take a photo of them and put them on Instagram. anyway, thank you guys very much for listening. Thank you, Bew, for talking about Mulholland Drive with me. I love talking about movies with you. I love watching movies with you.
Aww.
Please participate in June Sploitation. Go to fthismovie.net for that. July 9th is our podcast-a-thon fundraiser, which we're calling F Breast Cancer. You can follow us on Twitter. We're at F This Movie. Like us on Facebook if you haven't already. We're on iTunes, on Stitcher. We're on Instagram, although we don't always do a ton of stuff on there. You can email us, show suggestions, feedback, anything you want to tell us at fthismoviepodcast@gmail.com. If you go in the iTunes store, I've tweaked one setting so you can get some of our older episodes. I think it goes back about 150 now, but to listen to our 300 plus back catalog of episodes, you have to go to fthismovie.net. All of our shows are there.
All right.
And thank you guys very much for listening. We will be back next week. Thank you, Bew. Anything else you want to say?
Silencio.
Thanks for listening to FS Movie.